Welcome to Agents of Smooch. As we get deeper into the dark days of October, it is only fitting that we take some time to pair witches with romance. And what better movie to do this with than 1998's Practical Magic? The movie mixes up love spells and magic with danger and the undead, making it a perfect, almost Halloween romance movie. I am Smooch director Annette Weirstra, and for this very witchy mission, I am joined by Agent Tiffany Armant. Hello, Tiffany.
Hello, I'm ready with my midnight margarita.
Woohoo! I feel like that's like something we should be doing on Halloween.
Absolutely.
At midnight, watching this movie.
If we learned anything from the Owen women, it is definitely midnight margaritas.
Exactly. And we are also joined by brand new agent, Katie Burt. Katie has won my heart over not only because she likes this movie, but also because of our mutual love of Wynonna Earp. So I am very glad to have her join us as an agent of Smooch. Hey, Katie.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here as someone who is a fan of yours, of course, and, you know, we do share very similar tastes, good tastes.
No, Doctor Who, Wynonna Earp.
All of the things, but also because I love this movie so much. So, yes,
this is awesome. So when you are not here on Agents of Smooch, where else can people find you?
I am an editor and writer at denofgeek.com, where I cover things like Wynonna Earp, which is sadly on hiatus right now. Mm-hmm. And it's... You can also follow me on Twitter at Katie, K-A-Y-T-I, Burt, B-U-R-T.
That's awesome. And I'm sure this will not be your last Agents of Smooch mission with us.
No.
So Practical Magic is a star-packed adaptation of the book of the same name by Alice Hoffman, and is relatively recently came out with a sequel to this book. So maybe we'll get a sequel movie. We have Diane West and Stockard Channing as the perfectly eccentric aunts, Frances and Jet, who are most definitely the neighborhood witches. They take in their nieces, Sally and Jillian, played by Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, after their parents die. And the movie starts with the young sisters, but quickly jumps to grown-up Sally and Jillian, who are making very different life choices. Throw in some Goran Vishnik and Aidan Quinn as varyingly successful love interests, and a very small Evan Rachel Woods as Kylie, one of Sally's daughters, and you have a pretty star-packed movie. I remember this movie from a very long time ago, but I just want to know where you came to this movie. So, Katie, where did you come from watching this movie? You said you love it.
I do. I come from this movie from a long time ago. I'm pretty sure I saw it like when it first came out on video. I definitely didn't see it in theaters, but it's been one of my favorite movies since I was like 12. And I think, you know, especially as a kid, I loved magic stories. I love kids with magical power stories, and I love sibling stories. So this was one of my favorites, up there with like The Chronicles of Narnia and Escape to Witch Mountain, other magical sibling movies. But it's been interesting to continue to watch it into adulthood, especially the romance stuff, because I, you know, as a 12-year-old, I didn't care as much about it. And I still think it's maybe one of the less successful parts of the movie. But this movie, I think, is very good. So I think it's still doing fine in the romance department.
Well, it's not romance-centric necessarily, because there's a lot more relationships than love interests going on.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm very interested to know what 12-year-old you thought about some of the less successful romances in this movie.
Me too. I wish I could actually talk to 12-year-old me, but I'll try to channel my inner child.
How about for you, Tiff?
This is a yearly pilgrimage for me. I go down the, you know, spooky movie lineup as we approach fall. It's like my comfort thing to do as, you know, we get closer to Halloween. And this is definitely one of the movies that's first on my list. I have to watch it every year. I adore Sandra Bullock so much. Like, oh, yes. Man, I can't look away from her. I don't know what it is about her as an actress, but like I can't not watch her. So I love all of her movies. And this one really hits all the check boxes, because there's like spookiness, and it's a little dark, but, and then there's eccentric aunts, and there's witches, and there's magic, and there's sisters. Like, I don't even have a sister, and I love this movie. Like, it's one of those movies that it feels like a great treat to have. And it feels like a cozy moment movie where you just kind of want to put it on sometimes and just watch it, especially when the weather starts turning.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally the same as you, where I like to watch. I have like a whole repertoire of spooky movies to watch, and this is on my list. I remember really falling in love with Aidan Quinn in this movie because that was, I think, the first time I ever saw him. But also, I also don't have a sister. And this movie is one of those ones that made me wish for sisters, even though I have three brothers, so I'm not short on siblings. But yes, it just, I don't know. The relationship between the sisters is so intense and awesome. And I wished I had someone to have a relationship like that with.
It's really like the love story of the of the movie, I think. I actually also have an annual Practical Magic party, which I've done for 3 years officially now. But I think before that, I still like often watched it. So it's such a fun movie to watch every fall. It's interesting. Like, I live in Massachusetts, and this movie is based in Massachusetts, but it doesn't film here. but I still feel like it's a fun, like, New England fall experience. It's a fun fall experience, I think, for a lot of different places.
So since you both watch this movie a bunch and you've seen it a bunch, how do you not cry for like the first half hour? Because every time, I don't care how many times I've seen this movie, I'm like fighting back tears. Like, I get so emotionally wrapped up in the beginning of this movie. It affects me so much. Like, it really hits me. My tiny son was just in the room watching, and he was talking over it, and I'm like trying not to cry, like, in the middle. Shh. In the beginning, I was like, shh, mommy needs to watch this for work, like, but I'm crying, and I don't know what it is. A lot of times female empowerment makes me weepy, but with this, with the whole true love and the agony of love and just losing people that you love, it wrecks me to my core, and it all happens in like the first half hour of this movie.
Well, I think one of the things that takes this movie up from being sort of your typical chick flick is that even though it feels so comforting and cozy, it does not skip around some of those serious things, because I'm like, I have been in that situation of loss, like when Sandra Bullock is like laying in bed, wrapped in a blanket, probably wearing the same clothes for like weeks on end. Like, I've been through loss where you just feel like shit and don't want to get out of bed ever again. But then you get it together and you do, you know? And I just feel like a lot of times you kind of skip through, especially since that story is not really the main part of the movie. They do not treat it lightly, and it's not treated as anything but a deep and abiding love between, trying to get into calling them by their characters' names, Sally and Michael.
I think the first like 20 to 30 minutes of this movie just move so efficiently. I think something that maybe keeps me from crying is the soundtrack, because it's so good, and especially in the beginning is like, there's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of tonal shifts that are signaled by that soundtrack. But I'm also just, it's funny because I'm thinking about, you know, coming to this movie as like a kid, basically, and the Michael-Sally relationship. Like, as an adult, I'm like, obviously this is ridiculous. But as a kid, especially watching a movie, I was like, oh yeah, that's how you fall in love, you know? Like, it didn't feel that ridiculous.
What, you
that
mean
they
you just like
see
all
each
of a
other.
Sudden you run to each other in the middle of the street and you're like,
start
we
making
love
out.
Each other now.
I mean, you know, maybe not, like, I didn't believe it that much, but especially like, yeah, in movie magic world, like, I've seen more ridiculous scenes that don't later reveal that, or, you know, reveal that there's a spell at work. Yeah. I think also, like, having come to it as a kid, I hadn't experienced, like, some of those, like, harder losses or, like, depression. So I think that didn't hit me as hard. And I think, to a certain extent, because that's, you know, who I was when I first watched it, yeah, I'm able to bring some of that in even as an adult. I think about this too with like the fact that there's, you know, a domestic abuse storyline as like a main plot in this, which I think is so radical and so cool and handled really well, because, you know, that could just completely derail the whole movie in the sense that there wouldn't be any fun or or romance or all these other like tonal varieties, but it's handled, it's never, you know, it's handled with seriousness, and it isn't, it's also told from like, you know, the women's perspective, which is like a huge difference from most domestic abuse storylines, or violence storylines in movies. They never like go too deep in that direction, I think, or in the other directions of like, even when sad things happen, it doesn't linger too long while still, you know, making sure that it has weight.
This is like the original sister bonding movie before Frozen, right? Like,
yes,
let's kick these dudes to the curb and bond over our relationship as sisters instead. That's basically what it comes down.
But it walks a fine line, I think, between that treating it with the seriousness you need it to be a serious threat to them from a story point, but also a serious problem that women run into, but then also empowering them to deal with it.
Yeah, I was thinking about how I do love movies with magic in them and stories with magic, but it does feel relatively rare, at least in like movie and TV world, especially movies, I think, to see something where the stakes are so like domestic and like relatively small compared to like, they're still important and they're still treated with seriousness, but like no one's trying to like save the world, mm-hmm. or save the city or even save like the school. And I think, yeah, that feels somewhat unique and also just really, yeah, like a nice place to spend time, even though there's some really scary things happening.
The main problem I have with this movie, I adore it. I absolutely love this movie, and it really can do no wrong for me. But watching it for this show in particular, I got really very annoyed with the main like catalyst plot point that happens in this movie and their decision. It's like they come to this conclusion, this decision to bring this like lowlife guy back to life,
yes,
after an accidental murder, which they could have just not done that. Like, the stakes didn't feel as high as they were making it out to be. Like, they would have totally, it would have been self-defense. Like, this guy was abused, like, he kidnapped them. They accidentally overpoisoned him. But, and then they decide to, like, go, we have to bring him back. And it's like, oh, do you have to? Like, I know that this is starting the whole movie.
Well, I think the reason they give in the film, which I don't know if this is a good one or not, is that she's been giving him belladonna like for a while, like not just that night. So they're afraid that it will look like premeditated or like a gradual thing. I don't know like what criminal justice around this looks like, but.
Yeah, and does that, like, stuff show up in your system? Like, is it the science of that? I don't know. It seemed like they made up this moment, and it hinged on everything. And then the plot. And so you kind of have to just, like, be like, all right, fine, you had to do it. Like, it was a thing. you know, but that's probably the biggest flaw I find in this movie.
Well, I did like the fact, because, of course, Sally tries to talk the aunts into letting her bring Michael back, and they say he won't be the same when you bring him back. And then when Jillian's argument to that is like, well, he was already a dumpster fire, so like how bad could he be when you bring him back, right? So you're like, okay, sure, let's do it. Let's, like, this is a terrible idea. And then I also love that the aunts are just like, we're out. We don't know what's going on, but let them deal with their own problems, which is kind of fun.
I also love that we get to see them use whipped cream,
yes,
for the spell.
And she licks modern it witches. Off the dead body and taste it and like, don't do that. Take it out of the
also
can.
Moments when they're like freaked out because they're trying to stab him in the eye and there's lightning and they just kind of start shrieking. Like, I just love that. Like, that feels very relatable.
It does. They seem like they feel not unworldly. They feel like they're part of the modern regular world, even though they have these supernatural powers. It's not so much like about the witch powers in this movie. It's like a little added extra feature to their lives, but they're still very real people.
Well, and it sort of is just it feels very like possible and plausible, I think, because they do that the magic mm-hmm. is, it doesn't feel like we're in an alternate universe. It just feels like there might be a few witches who can stir their coffee cup without touching the stir stick.
Gosh,
kind of
so
thing.
Cool.
Like, it's so subtle how they do it.
Or blow the candle wick mm-hmm. aflame. I always wanted to be able to do that.
One thing this movie did for me, though, it kind of messed me up and gave me super unrealistic expectations about hair. Like, oh my gosh. As
yes.
a young kid watching,
oh, her hair,
like a young
so
teenage
good.
Girl, like watching this movie, it's like, oh my God, that's so much hair. Like, is that how people's hair is? It's like, no. No one's hair is like that.
Yes.
And it took me years.
My hair is really long right now. And I'm like rewatching this movie.
Can you get that volume?
I mean, probably not.
It's all extensions. I mean, really, when you think about
it.
But man, did I want that much hair. So good. Stupid
yeah,
standard
it is
bullet.
Good hair.
Giant hair.
It's like, well,
where to go from the
I
hair.
I was like, that's all. That's where we're stopping now. We
no,
have nothing
yep,
more
done.
To say after
yep.
the hair. I do have ant goals because now I'm probably more of age of the ants, but I'm just like, probably now is the time to start dressing like those ants and being that, because I am not a mother, I am an ant, and I just need to like embrace my witchy antness now and start dressing in those clothes and wearing weird hats, and I do need to get hair like hair pieces to poop up the hair.
Everyone in this movie has giant hair, like all even
they
the children know. Like they're covered in hair.
Even Aidan Quinn has a fair amount of hair in this movie.
The 90s were all about lots of hair, not on your eyebrows though. Tiny eyebrows,
no.
Big hair.
My sister and I talk about like buying a house like this and being these like aunts and just like I don't know being witches.
I'm coming to
this,
visit
this
when
movie
you
also
do.
Gave me unrealistic
yes,
kitchen
please.
Expectations.
And I think that is one of the things that like again as with adult eyes It's just cool to see, like, this whole world of, like, women. Yeah, like, the aunts are really important. The daughters are really important. The, you know, phone tree is not, like, a hugely important thing. But, yeah, it's just this world of women in a way that, like, movies so rarely are. Especially movies that have, like, I don't know, like, supernatural.
And in the in 98, I feel like we might see a movie that's cast so dramatically female, but not necessarily in 98.
Yeah. And I think I've had conversations with, I think like, especially like men where it's been like, well, wow, like Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock are in this movie. And it's like, yeah, at the time, like these were the kinds of movies that they were cast in, which I don't like, I think these movies are great, but you know, to see them now where their career is, I think maybe especially Nicole Kidman, they both have a lot more power and what's available to women has opened up a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you have an entire male critical character that almost has no lines because Michael does not speak hardly at all in this movie, which is interesting.
Yeah. The men are kind of accessories in this movie, aren't mm-hmm. they?
We're not opposed.
No. I do love Michael really makes an impression. I mean, he's not that important in this movie, but I just love that he seems to be an Apple salesman or like he just seems happy. He seems like so uncomplicated.
It's island life. Whatever island they live on, who knows?
Like what you said earlier about the romance there, they basically just like fling each other into each other's arms and fall in love. But I think what supports that as something believable is that when you see them together and with the kids and all like the like this little like basically all you get is a montage of their marriage. And it just seems like such a pleasant thing. And he seems like a good husband, a good partner, a good dad. I guess we don't even know that they're married. Do we?
She says, a husband I can't stop kissing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Right. So they do. So, because we don't see a wedding, we just see them together.
He's also an actor who's, like, you know, continued to work.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently in The Babysitter's Club. He played one of the parent people. So, yeah. I mean, even I think the supporting roles in this are just, like, really, really well cast with charismatic people who make this world feel, like, richer. But those montages do a lot of work. I love a good montage.
Oh,
so
me too.
I'm always here for that.
All my favorite movies have montages.
Yes. We always want montages.
Preferably with like cheesy songs and or ballads. Mm-hmm.
I do like the wannabe witch friends that she has working in her store. Every movie that needs those people.
The two women in the shop.
Yes.
Well, I like that they resist making, they resist just going like the mean girl route. Like, not so much with those characters, but like with the larger, you know, phone tree coven. It would be easy, I think, trope-wise, to just be like, and they were evil, and like, or like the worst, and then they showed them that they're powerful, and they don't know what they're talking about. But it's actually like, they're an integral part of saving Jillian, and they also want to be included, which is really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of about acceptance into the community and finding each other, like commonality through the difference. And you see that they're like repeatedly, a lot of these people are coming to the aunts for help, even if they are sort of ostracizing the Owen family.
One theme that continues throughout this movie is the idea that Sally is essentially denying her her powers as a witch. And a lot that is very frustrating for her sister, who feels like she would love to have more power like Sally does. And the idea of Sally kind of coming to terms with what her life is and accepting herself. I think that that is a different take on sometimes the witch story, right? There's usually like the coming of age witch story or, you know, the figuring out that you have powers. But the idea of Sally becoming a character that not only is looking for romance in her life, which I feel like that's kind of a trope in a lot of romance stories, that like, oh, a woman's not complete until she finds a man. But here it's like she wasn't complete until she embraced her family and her heritage. Mm-hmm. And then she was open to finding someone that also supported her. So that was nice that's there. It's not just all about like, gonna get me a man and then I'll be happy. You know, that does happen, but it's not riding on all of that.
And I think that community acceptance was equally something that she was looking for and part of why she was rejecting her powers. Mm. But so coming around to being able to accept her powers and accept them like in the context of your community and having the community cheer for them as they jump off the roof at the end is almost as important to Sally, I think, or more important to her than finding the right guy.
Yeah, and I think that final scene makes the romance between Sally and Gary.
It's like the least romantic name. Sorry to all the Garys out there.
Yeah, I feel like we don't actually hear his name that much. I mean, I guess he's like, what's his title?
Sheriff? I don't know.
I don't think he's sheriff.
Detective?
What is it?
Police agent. Person.
I don't know. Yeah, the fact that we don't know shows like how interested this movie is in kind of like exploring his character. But I think that final scene makes that romance work for me more than if it ended before that, because just the fact that you see him being so supportive and like just also just fully coming into like their world and not messing up the good thing they have going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just makes me get totally on board with that. I'm like, you know what? Sally deserves all of the nice things.
I do get really annoyed. I was watching his eyes the entire movie, and I'm like, they just both look blue like all the time. Like, and also she's looking at his eyes constantly. Like, how would you not notice when someone has two different color eyes? It's like one of the first things that you notice in a face feature because you look at someone's eyes.
Yeah, it's very rare. I was watching this with, this year I watched it with someone who had never seen it before, my friend Justin, and he was, like, convinced that he didn't have different color eyes until the moment when they, like, fell in love or whatever. He thought that there was, like, that was a plot point. And I was like, no, I think he's supposed to have had different color eyes this whole time.
I know, they should have just, like, left it in there, and then she could have been like, that's weird. You know, I don't know. It does. She notices at the right time for the movie. Mm. But I'm mad as a like rewatcher of this movie so many times that he does not look like he has a green eye. Like they're both blue the whole time.
Well, and I know someone who has a green eye and a blue eye, and it is very striking. Like you can't not notice it. like in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably cool annoying as hell. Being one it's of those people. Awesome. 'Cause people probably comment on it all of the time.
But it is a noticeable thing.
Yeah, yeah. It would be 100% noticeable.
What if all those people have had love spells made about them?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're the object of someone who's really obsessed with practical magic.
It's possible. And Nat, I want to hear more about your love of Aidan Quinn.
This movie was the first time I'd seen him, and I just found the whole concept of putting out that wish and then having him come and fulfill it in the most, again, like it felt pretty natural. He can ride a horse well, forwards and backwards, as he says. And he comes in and flips those pancakes. And like, it's nothing that is so in itself, any of those things so rare, but I think the combination of them. And I love the star as the his favorite symbol, but they never, like, he don't ask it. It's just he has a star because of being a detective. So, you know, that was just sort of charming and soothing and nice. And he has, I'm going to say, he has very nice blue eyes.
Which, eyes.
Yes. Moral. So I'm always kind of, ever since this movie, whenever you see him in something, and like, I most recently have been watching him in Elementary, I'm just like, yeah, I still like him. So I'm always pleased after I've seen this movie just to see him show up and keep having a career. And like, I can't think of anything in particular, but just, you know, he's always popping up here and there.
One of my friend's brother he was named after Aidan Quinn. His name is Aidan. So there's a lot of lovers of Aidan Quinn out there. And he does a really good job in this movie. So,
yeah. And I think he's meant to be nice, and, you know, he has to, like, he's a more, I think both him and Sally are very moral characters, because Sally makes them bring home this dead body and bury it in their backyard and smash everything she does is because she thinks she's trying to be moral, even though she ends up hitting him over the head and killing him for the second time with a pan. But he too is like trying to make moral choices, but then his moral choice is to sort of fall in line and protect them, because, you know, I feel like part of the reason...
Be bad at his job.
Yeah, he's like, he's being bad at his job, making a moral choice. And I was thinking, you know, it's really easy to make a moral choice like this over someone like Jimmy, who is basically so evil, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a moral question. But I don't think this movie is meant to be that deep, so it doesn't need to be more nuanced and give us a more shadedly villainous creature. He is just villain from beginning to end, and becoming more and more villainous as the movie goes on.
I mean, and we really don't even know this Arizona cop's jurisdiction. Like, what's he doing all the way up in Massachusetts?
It's true. Like, he probably has no jurisdiction.
He's just like, I'm just gonna go up here because I read some chick's letter. Like,
oh,
many.
Oh, I love that detail though. How like fragile. Like, I wonder which like person involved in the production had to carry that letter around in a pocket for weeks on end to make it that.
That was a pretty romantic touch. I do like that it felt like their affection for each other did go both ways, mm-hmm. whether it was a spell or not. He was looking for her as much as she was looking for him. So that was really nice.
Yes,
I think they could have used a montage.
Hmm.
At the
when, I don't know where they would have put it.
At the end, when, or before?
No, before. I don't know where they would have put it. I don't think they need a montage.
Well, they have that
fine.
Little flashback
I just want
of
more
him
montages.
On the horse as a little boy. And then the horse had like a star on its butt for some reason while he was riding it backwards. Did you notice that?
I didn't notice that.
They do a really good job considering there isn't actually that much time spent on this romance. So I think they have to do things like, he read this letter a lot before he came to town to make that relationship, I think, work better. But also just like Sandra Bullock, like both of them sell it so hard. There's a scene where they're in the house when I feel like they just stare each other the whole time. I don't even remember what they're talking about, but I'm like, yes, sold.
Well, and then you have that contrasting with Jillian and Jimmy, and Jillian being, well, and I love the fact when they have, by the way, everyone needs to go out this Halloween and have a midnight margarita party.
Oh, I want that so much.
And one thing I love, okay, first, I love that they get sort of ugly drunk, because I don't think you see women getting, like, a group of women getting to be like, you're just so drunk right now. And, you know, they're talking and teasing Jillian and calling her a slut, but not in a slut shamey way, sort of in a teasing, loving, that's who you are way, which I really appreciate. But then also, you know, that is her adventuring out of their community, going off dating, never falling in love, but continually dating, and then finding Jimmy is just such a contrast to the safety that Sally has chosen.
Yeah, I hope things work out for Jillian.
I know, because we don't actually know if, like, what happens to her, if she decides to stay or not. I guess she stays because she's jumping off the roof.
Yeah, and she was, like, you know, the little girl who said that she couldn't wait to fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she seems to be, like, the catalyst for a whole bunch of problems and to move Sally's story along. But I would really like to know, like, what's going on with her. You know, like, she needs to be, like, the second movie needs to be about her journey and finding just satisfaction in her life. Because she feels like she's looking for something also. That's probably, like, the reason she leaves and she's out and she's with, like, tons of different people, because she's searching for something herself. And I would like to see a Jillian story.
When Kirsten, who is my Herb Chirp co-host, and I, we were watching this last year, and we were reading up about the sequel, and we're like, you know what we want the sequel of this movie to be anyways, is to, let's bring back Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman, and they get to be the aunts, and you can bring the daughters and whoever else, like a new cast of younger generations, and sort of see where we're like, we want to see where did Sally and Jillian go. Maybe the aunts are still around. So you have three generations in the same house or in this, like, together, and seeing how they interact. I'm like, I would really love to see. I think that would be so fun to see them, what, 30 years later. Where are they all at now? That's the sequel I want to see.
That would be awesome.
I would love that so much.
I don't know if they can afford
Nicole Kidman
and Sandra Bullock in the same movie.
And Evan Rachel Wood.
Yeah. And yeah, so I don't know if they could afford that. But that's my dream.
Well, there was a point, I don't know if it's still happening, when HBO had ordered a pilot for the Practical Magic prequel that's based on the aunts when they're younger.
Oh, that's right. It's a prequel. It's not a sequel.
Yeah. But I want the sequel.
Yeah.
I mean, I would watch that too. Like, give me a whole expanded universe.
I just want to talk about the aunts for a while, though, because I feel like they are such great characters. Mm-hmm. And kind of a trope in terms of, like, you know, you see them again. You see them in Sabrina. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like a common trope of having witchy aunts to take care of you.
Yeah, it's just like such a rare portrayal of, like, especially at this point, of, like, older women who are having fun and who aren't, like, married. Like,
yeah, they're not spinsters, even if they are spinsters.
Exactly. Like, they have lots, like, they're on the organizing committee for whatever, like, festival they're going to. They have lots of their own, like, things that they do, but are also really important within this family.
They have a lot of lovers, apparently.
They have midnight margaritas. yeah, they seem to be, like, have some sort of business in which they use, like, you know, do spells for the local community. They're living their best lives.
Also played by Diane West and Stockard Channing, which, they're both great in these roles.
This movie, when it came out, was panned.
Of course it was.
Which, I know. It's just, I mean, it's not surprising. But I do feel like there's a lot of people who haven't seen it. It's, like, considered a cult classic. And I'm just like, I don't know. I can't believe that everyone hasn't seen this movie.
Have either of you read the book?
No. You know what? I was thinking while I was watching the movie, I was going, I bet Tiff has read the book.
I own the book. My friend gave it to me as a gift, but I have not read it yet because I keep waiting for the weather to be cool. And now I was like, I missed my opportunity. I should have read it right before the show.
You could have been our, like, in the book person.
Actually, in the book. Everyone loves that person.
I also own the book and haven't read it.
Oh, good. So.
I started reading it because I watched this last weekend in preparation for the podcast, and I tried to throw together like a pod Practical Magic Party, which totally worked. But while I was waiting for it to start, I was just reading it aloud, some of it aloud to my sister. And you never know. You never know. But yeah, I would definitely keep reading.
Yeah, my sense, my guess would be that such a tight story would actually have a good book behind it, and that you would get a little more of that depth of characters happening that you just don't get when you have, this is probably what, 90 minutes, hour and 45. So every time I watch the movie, I think, I should read this book. And then I, confession, have never done it. So
it just, the movie's so perfect and satisfying. You're like, okay, that was a perfect experience. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was interesting that one of the screenwriters on this, Robin Swycord, also wrote the screenplay for Matilda and the 90s Little Women movie, among other things. She also was a screenwriter and director for the Jane Austen Book Club. So, good job.
A movie like this often just gets panned because it's a movie directed at women. And these sort of like chick flicks and romances and type, they just never, like, people just never rate them as highly automatically.
Yeah, I think even trying to put it into a category, like, I think it is described as a romantic comedy. And while I think it has like romance and comedy, I don't know if that's like the perfect way to describe it. But I don't know, especially in 1998, if there was a shorthand for what this movie is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also reasonably spooky, because if we're looking at it as a Halloween movie, those moments when you see Jimmy coming back to life and then also possessing Jillian, spoilers, by the way, that those parts are pretty, like, they're not, they don't scare me, but they are creepy enough that they, I think that's part of why it does become, because it's not set at I guess it ends at Halloween, but it's not really a Halloween movie per se.
No, and I've definitely had the experience of, as like one of my favorite movies, I've shared it with a lot of people over the years, and one of my good friends in college gets scared very easily watching movies, and I told her this was a romantic comedy, and the part where Jimmy possesses Jillian, she got so afraid. It was like,
aww.
Not really mad at me, but was like, why did you tell me this was a romantic comedy? So there's definitely a spectrum. And also, yeah, there's a lot going on in this movie that you might not expect, I think, if you go into it cold or not really knowing what it's about.
Yeah, the spooky CGI stuff, it does kind of come out of nowhere, because the majority of the movie has nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't establish that kind of that feel to it in the beginning. I mean, yeah, you have like the creepy guy and they're in the car and the whole
abduction, frogs
and the frogs and the roses growing, but mm-hmm. like the possession and then like the smoke monster at the end or the dust monster that like falls, that it kind of comes out of nowhere and it's like, oh, okay, now we're doing this now, huh? Okay. But that kind of pulls it out of that like realm of this could be happening, because that cop, I always forget his name because it's never said.
Gary.
Gary. That's the worst name. Like, why?
We're sorry, Gary.
He was just like, oh, whoa, I just saw a ghost. That was super weird. Okay, bye. Like, like, it feels so out of nowhere. I would almost understand more if, like, the sister saw it. Just like the little girl, she sees the apparition mm-hmm. of Mr. Angel out there in the roses, and that makes sense to me because you kind of have a more you have that magical sense about you if you're a member of this family. But mm-hmm. for Gary the cop to kind of just have that happen and like see this possession come out of a woman, and he was just like, oh, okay, this is happening now. Like that. And he's like, oh, okay, I'll hold up my star as a way to defend against it. That part for me was a little, it was like a little Buffy, you know, like,
yeah,
it was a little too Buffy.
There's definitely a lot of charmed moments in this.
Yeah. Charm, Buffy. Like that was all popular around this time.
Yep.
Okay, can we talk more about the soundtrack, though?
Oh, because yeah,
I also owned the soundtrack. And I think because my parents weren't cool in this way, like, this was maybe the first real time I was introduced to, like, Stevie Nicks and Joni Mitchell, which is, you know, how it goes sometimes. but, like, I still listen to this soundtrack because it's very good.
I love how they use You Are Always On My Mind. Mm. And when they're having their tequila party with the mysteriously showing up tequila, and the aunts just start singing it out of the blue, and it just is so eerie.
Very eerie.
Do you have any criticisms? We talked a little bit about your criticisms, Tiff. Do you have any criticisms about it, Katie?
I can't decide if this movie is like a little xenophobic. Maybe not. I feel like one of Jimmy's like only, I mean, other than him being like the worst, he's very much a foreigner in a movie that is very much about like white Americans. And there's like that part where he's talking about Louis L'Amour. I don't know. It's like, it's the sort of thing where it's like, these things are problematic because they're patterns across multiple movies and TV shows and whatever. So, like, when you see it in one movie, you're like, I don't know. I'm also a white American, so I'm obviously less, like, sensitive and attuned to those sorts of things. And this is definitely nothing I picked up on as a kid. But watching it as an adult, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. Maybe.
Does it have to be the one foreign person being the villain?
Yeah, and Goran Visionek does such a good job.
He was also such a baby in this movie, still handsome as ever. I didn't recognize him until I watched, because I didn't watch this movie for a while, and then you kind of come back to it, and I was like, oh wait, I know him. I did not take him with me as I did Aidan Quinn when I moved forward and watched other movies. So.
I was at a roundtable at San Diego Comic-Con for Timeless, so we got to interview him, and I wanted to ask him about Practical Magic so bad. I just had to restrain myself because that's not what I was there for.
I was like, you should have just slipped it in.
I know. I was like, ooh. Yeah. I mean, if I had a time machine, that's where I'd go back to.
Well, I think I will ask now. Final thoughts about the movie. Why is it that movie you come back to every year?
I mean, I'm too close to this movie. I mean, what's, you know, it has all of these amazing actresses playing witches. It's a, like I said before, it's like a world almost entirely composed of powerful women. It's a world that is about, that combines like the domestic and the magical into one. It has a great soundtrack. Come to my next Practical Magic party, and you can watch it with me.
I would love to. Based on that, it makes so much sense that you would also be drawn to Wynonna Earp, because it's another supernatural, women-focused, powerful women story. It's like, this movie has just been prepping us for Wynonna Earp.
It's true.
Yeah.
The long game.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Tiff? Final thoughts?
It's so wonderfully 90s. Like, it is just so, like, the clothes are so 90s, those long skirts and the little tank tops and sweaters. Like, I love everything 90s. I love 90s music. And I get that feeling again when I watch this movie, like I was a teenager, and especially a teenager who kind of grew up, I guess you would call New York, New England. It's close enough. We have like kind of the same weather and boats and stuff. So yeah, it gives me that same feel. It feels like a little bit of that home. It's just like when you love the music that you grew up with and that taught you to love music. And that's like the era of music you relate to. This movie is like the era of movies that I was watching all of these romantic comedies. So when I see a romantic comedy, or I crave watching a romantic comedy or a romance movie or anything like this, this is the exact era of movie that I crave to binge watch or to rewatch as a comfort. And so that's why I keep going back to this movie every single fall. It just needs to be there. This and The Craft is definitely up there. So Sandra Bullock, all of her movies, they just really, they're a comfort. They're a friend.
I feel like it took a long time for Sandra Bullock to kind of be recognized for how good she is. And getting the actual, like, now you're seeing her in so much meatier stuff. But I feel like we always knew she was that good from the beginning. You can't put her in a rom-com even and not think she's amazing.
Oh, her facial expressions are so good. So, mm-hmm. I adore her.
Mm-hmm. I am slightly older than you guys. So 1998, I was getting married. But it's still like, I feel like the 80s, 90s is sort of like that peak period of, you know, growing up. And so it does feel very much of that era. And everything in terms of their wardrobes are so good. Because even the aunt's quirky aunt witchy wardrobe was still sort of that time too, because we were always wearing those, like, I was very into long skirts and sweaters and all that kind of thing. So you just look at that and go, yeah, it's good. It's kind of a world I would still just like to move into because it just seems so nice. Like, there's less problems there. Your biggest problem
are just, you know, undead boyfriends and frogs and overgrown rose bushes. It's fine.
And bossy community ladies who won't let me be on the phone tree. For the record, there's no way I want to be on that phone tree.
I know.
Nowhere near that phone tree. That would not be my bar.
No, I rolled so hard. But eye rolls this all over for that phone tree scene. I was like, really? This is what we're ambitious about? The phone tree? Come on. You're a powerful witch. Stop it.
You don't need this stupid phone tree. But I do like that, because you knew it had to come back somehow. And it comes back in calling them all up. And then they all just show up. So I do like that it becomes sort of this non-issue, easy transition to having all of the women show up and you suddenly have a coven.
Yeah, that's one thing about this movie. It's very economical in that there's nothing wasted. Every part of this movie harkens back to another like part of the movie, or it's informing this, or, you know, there's that the little indication of this is how things are. Here's the, you know, even the little opening when you have like the historical view of the past mm-hmm. family member, like the noose rope comes back and is used as like a relic that the aunts use to protect the children. It's like every single little part of this movie is referred to at least twice. And I think that mm-hmm. that's what makes it really great. And there's the editing was really well done, and it was distilled down to everything that they needed, which makes it very good.
Yeah, I think it aged pretty well too, because they're not relying on a ton of special effects. The story holds up, and the filming, it all kind of holds up. And that's part of probably why it is a movie I like to go back to. Also, I just like watching witchy Halloween-y things in October. It's fun.
You'd be a monster if you didn't.
It's true. What is wrong with you? There's got to be everyone has a favorite Halloween movie. I think that we will wrap it up there. So thanks so much for joining me, Tiff.
Thanks for having me. And next time, let's get our brooms and, I don't know, have a seance.
Let's do that. We'll do it with margaritas. Yes. And I'm sure nothing crazy will happen.
No, nothing at all. Mm-mm. It never, nothing crazy ever happens when we're drinking.
Nothing crazy happens. Never.
Never.
And thank you for coming, Katie. I'm excited that you're joining us.
I am too. I definitely hope to be back for future podcasts.
I'm sure that will happen. We seem to have lots we could talk about in terms of things that we both like.
I know. I think this was like kind of coincidental. You just happened to be like, we're going to record something about Practical Magic. And I was like, well, that's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yes, you did not hesitate to jump on board, which is great. So until next time, agents, keep a broom handy for when your neighborhood witches need you, and stay safe. If you really like Practical Magic, you can get more of it over on our sister podcast this October, Chick Flick Fix. And they are also doing a whole bunch of Halloween seasonal chick flicks for the month of October. So make sure you check them out too. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of the Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon. Thank you.